That's not helpful at all.
Green.
Okay. Now turn from yellow greenish to green greenish. Okay. Okay, cool. So let's write a unit test for a very simple use case in which we want to add two numbers together. And it would look something like this. So we usually, when I write tests, I try to come up with at least three cases. So a positive one, which tests the happy path, one that actually tests the opposite, and then try to find or think of edge cases in which my software could actually fail. So this is such an example in which we assert that 2 plus 2 is 4, that 2 plus 2 is not equal to 5, and we also try to find some edge cases, like if combine types or, you know, do something other funky stuff, that my software still works. So, you know, if you look at that example, you can kind of understand why I think writing tests can be pretty boring, right? So yeah, that's my conclusion. Testing can be boring. Then if we look at another aspect of writing unit tests, what if our software project grows? If we have n features, then we have, you know, a linear amount of tests accompanied to that. But what if we then start to combine features? So, you know, function A and function B, we have to test combinations, like pairs of those functions as well. Then, you know, the amount of tests would grow quadratically. But then if we're going further and we combine even more features, at a certain point that, you know, that kind of growth makes it really hard to scale, to go further. So, testing, I think, can be hard, at least if you want to do it properly. Like, if you really want to make sure that you have confidence in your code, you want to have as much testing, as much cases covered in those tests. And, you know, if you approach it that way, then testing can be hard. So how can we fix this? Well, some people, they came up with property-based testing. And kind of, you know, a summary of it is, instead of us humans writing examples, let's tell the computer, let's define properties of our code, and let the computer come up with cases. So that's the folks that are a company called Qvik. They came up with this idea around 2000. And they build a project and the company around those ideas. And they've also added some more features to it as well. But kind of the general idea of property-based testing is that we define properties instead of examples for our tests. So let's have a look and a comparison how we could do that. So let's say that we write a test for string reversal. So we take some string and we have a function that reverses the order of of those characters. And how would, you know, a unit test for such a case look like? It would be something like this. So a raise of hands. If you write tests like this, who feels confident that these tests are actually covering all cases of our function? No hands raised. Nobody feels confident. One maybe. Yeah, everybody's like keep feeling anxious, right? You're not fully convinced about this test. You could probably write it in a different way, but if you would translate these things in properties, so let's, you know, take a pause and think if you would try to express that behavior, that functionality in properties, how would you do it? You would come up with examples of special characters, numbers, these kind of things. So examples, right? Basically, examples of edge cases, right? Like weird input. But that's not how you would, for example, define your software as a property. Those are, again, examples, clear use cases. But they're not properties of our code, right?
One property is the length of the string in input is the same length of the string that you get for output.
Yeah, that's a good one. So if we reverse a string, in both cases, the length of the string should stay the same. That's the property, right? So another one, still readable, okay. Another one would be if we reverse a string twice, then we should come back with the original one. And this is how you would write it down in a property-based test. So we define a property reverse string twice returns the original. And we actually tell, so on this second line, we tell from all the possible string inputs. So we ask the library to come up with any strings. If we reverse that string twice, it should come back with the original, right? And if we run this, then the library will generate about 100 cases for us. And in doing that, try to prove that its property holds for our code. So other examples, if we reverse a list, then the first item becomes the last one, and the last item becomes the first one. If we have a palindrome and we reverse it, it will stay the same. So palindromes are strings which, when are reversed, they return the same string as well. And like you said, the amount of items. So this applies to any kind of list or string that we're reversing. If we reverse it, the amount of items stay consistent. You know, it's not like some things disappear magically. So if we, and the funny thing is if we try to write it properly again, so I don't know if anybody noticed, but in the previous example, I specified that I want to generate a list or generate examples of strings, but which only contain ASCII characters. But if we, you know, do the funky stuff, the funky characters part, so we say, well, generate any string from the UTF-8 set, what will actually our library tell when we run that? And then it finds an edge case. So there are Unicode characters that, you know, that apply to previous characters as well. So when we reverse them, you don't get back the original anymore. And this is, you know, these are kind of edge cases which we as humans probably couldn't come up with. Well, you do know that it exists, but if I ask you like now within these 5-10 minutes to actually write this example, you actually wouldn't be able to do that. And it actually, you know, normally it runs about 100 cases, but even after 8 cases, it found this example. So that's great. It found an edge case. And the other thing that's is not shown in the example, but if you write a property and it finds a case for which the test fail or the property fails, property-based testing tools are also able to shrink down the case. So it does a binary search. So you know, if I have a list of numbers and our tests fail, then it tries to the half of items from that list. Sorry. If it still fails, then it goes on and on until it finds the minimal set of input under which our property doesn't hold anymore. So let's talk about some use cases. Where has this kind of tooling been used? So Volvo, at a certain point, wanted to have third-party parts to be replaced by other companies. So they came up with a specification in which these components should interact with one another. So they wrote a specification about 3,000 pages long. They had about 6 vendors come in to, you know, to test this their specification. Combined, they had a million lines of code written. And when they used property-based testing to actually test these 6 vendors' implementations of the specification, they even found about 200 issues. 100 of them were actually in the specification itself, and 100 of them were in the combination of those parts. Because, you know, a car consists of several parts, so you could take component A from vendor A and some other component from another vendor, and they test their components in isolation, but never together. So the combination of, you know, these components actually yielded some errors as well. Klarna is a financial system, and they, at a certain point, they had a problem which occurred only once several weeks, and they had kind of a hint because it came up with when they were generating files and they were over 1 gigabyte big. And they spent 6 weeks full-time investigating this issue, and they couldn't find the source. Like, they could stumble upon it, they could, in some cases, trigger it, but it was actually impossible to find out how and where it came from. And it took them 3 days, or less than 3 days in total, to come up with a model to write the properties. less than a day to run the properties until they actually stumble upon race condition in which that error occurred, actually. So those are two kind of big examples. What are the other occasions in which we could actually use property-based testing? One obvious one is if we have symmetrical functions. So if you serialize and deserialize something, those are opposite functions. You could easily property-based test them. If you need to have some other mathematical, if you have functionality that needs to have some kind of mathematical proof, it's good for comparing systems. So I had to, in one case, I had to rewrite the system in another language, and then it's nice to, you know, have the old system and the new system and test them against one another. And I haven't really mentioned it during this talk, but the tool that Cubic has built also has special conditions to test concurrency items. So if you know, if you have a system like the Klarna financial system, we want to test what happens if five people do a transaction simultaneously. So conclusion, property-based testing can generate all kinds of test cases for us. Very often also edge cases that we as humans don't think about because it, you know, tries a spectrum of all inputs that you specified and find very weird items. Because of the shrinking, it also helps narrow down the diagnose what the actual culprit of the error is. It helps reduce complexity. And like I said, because you have to think about as in properties instead of examples, it actually makes you think differently about your tests. It makes you think more philosophically. And I think that in itself is already an advantage in learning property-based testing. So I think we're out of time. So a small thank you for SlidesGo. So if you think this is a nice presentation, I pulled it from their website. And I also have to, you know, contribute back mentioning them. I also want to thank you all for attending this early and for listening. And for the organizers, of course, I keep forgetting that. So if you think, well, this was a nice introduction, it sparks my interest, how can I continue learning this? There's a good book on a website called propertesting.com. If you're not using Elixir or any of the other Bing languages, there are also libraries in other languages like Python has Hypothesis, for example. You know, look it up on either property-based testing or generative testing. Some communities call it differently. And if you think, well, how should I think in, you know, writing properties? Then John Hughes, one of the founders of Cubic, also has a good talk in which he talks about how do you come up with these properties? You know, how do you think in this way? So I don't know if we do have time for questions.